Welcome to the DanielJMcKeown.com podcast, episode number 12. It's August 17th, 2011. Well, coming up, we have a discussion of new music services featuring Jessica. I'm also going to talk about a couple iOS photography apps. I'm going to talk about a Mac OS X photography app. We'll have a few more stories. And we'll also maybe have a quick discussion about how many web domains do you own. And so I think the first thing that I want to mention, though, is about my new music side project. Now, of course, my main music project is my band Neener, but I also have started a trance side project called Screambird. Well, if you want to hear that whole song, it's called Fly Away. You can check it out at screambird.djmcloud.com. So, I also have a video, and if you check my blog at djmcloud.com, you'll be able to go and see links to the video by checking out the video podcast at pacificpelican.us/podcast, because I actually made a video set in Cleveland, driving around different areas, east side, and also the outer west side along the lake. I used some different effects on some of the video, and I basically worked to had the idea about, you know, what the song would go with. So I went out and got some footage, and then I put it together. So I you know, it was kind of fun to make that that video, and I think it works pretty well to go along with my trance music there. And I want to also talk to you about the iOS apps that I was going to mention. There are a couple photo editing iOS apps that I think are definitely worth checking out that I've found recently. One of them is called Decimate. Now, it's spelled D-E-C-I-M-8. There's a link to it in the show notes, so if you go to djmcloud.com, you can see the link. But you can also find it in the App Store. I think it was $1 when I got it. It is a really cool app. They sell it as a different digital way to process your photos. Instead of harkening back to retro film styles, they talk about looking for new digital effects, and they give you a series of effects, probably about a dozen, and then you can rearrange them and turn them on and off, so you can have the effects work on the picture in whatever order you want. It'll take a picture from your library, or you can take a picture with the camera and then process it. And I do enjoy the Hipstamatic and Instagram and other retro film style iOS camera apps, but I definitely think Decimate has its niche too, and it's a very cool, very fun. I think you might enjoy some of the photo processing it does. And there's this app that right now, I got it just recently. It's free. This is a cool app that, while it offers, I think, a more conventional take on iOS photo filtering, it does an excellent job and has some interesting implementations of some of these effects. And it's called Pixlr Mimic. Well, the dinosaur sound. Well, that's from the Apple Loops. Can you believe that? I don't know if I should be happy that they have a dinosaur sound at all at Apple Loops, or complain about this one. But The dinosaur sound tells us that we are going to go right now to a clip.
And who is Mr. Globalization and got, you know, a rat? He's a horrible predictor. He's an utterly incompetent pundit. And worst of all, he's a just god-awful fucking writer. He's really unreadable. He's just mawkish and stupid.
That's Drift Class talking about Tom Friedman in the Professional Left podcast number 88.
But he is just horrible. Needless to say, he is a wise man who shows up on every show, who's invited on the Charlie Rose show routinely, and has, of course, a permanent column in the New York Times, because that apparently is some sort of, I don't know, protective enclave for incompetent neocon writers.
I think basically that's a great description of Tom Friedman. I wrote an article a few years ago, which was a review of one of his books. My mom gave me that book because she said that, she wasn't really getting very interested in it, but she thought I might, because maybe it was the kind of stuff I was more interested in. It turns out my mom put it down because she's a smart person. This is my guess, that she's a smart. She put it down because she's a smart person, and it just wasn't making any sense to her. It wasn't saying anything to her. It's a terrible book. The book called The World Is Flat. So if you go to the show notes, you could check out my review of that book from a while ago. There's a link to it. Another way you can reach the show notes, the front page, is through pacificpelican.us. So that'll show you the latest entries. So you can scroll down to find this podcast's own little blog post. So I'm going to mention the Mac OS X app. Now this is also a Mac OS X app that is in the App Store, I think for $30. So it's a modest investment. Let me explain to you why I think it might be worth it if you like photo processing and photo editing. It's called Pixelmator, and actually, what it does is it offers a photo editing pixel based or raster based interface for editing photos. So it has some of the same features as something like Photoshop or the GNU image manipulation program or other competitors. It offers the ability to put text, to use different brushes on a photo, to use their layers system. I think it's very cool. But what really kind of stands out, what's an interesting feature on this app, Pixelmator, is that you can get access to the Mac OS X core image filters. Now, there's certain photo processing capabilities that are built into OS X for application developers to use. They make a very good use by allowing you to use these filters for the ones that are where it can be interactive. They have a good interface to adjust, and I really think that this gives you a great window into the power of OS X photo processing. So I definitely think that it's worth checking out. And there are rumors that Core Image, those tools might be built into iOS 5, so they may be used to enhance iOS photo apps in the very new future. Now, I've got the promised appearance by Jessica coming up, where she has a little cameo talking to me about the new music services out there and what we think might happen with those. So, joining me now is my beautiful wife, Jessica. And, Jessica, there have been some new trends in online music listening. So I just wanted to know what your take on a couple of them were. Well, one of them that's gaining some popularity lately is Turntable.fm.
I like that a lot. I think the little avatars are fun, and you can build up and maybe eventually add cool accessories.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly an interesting new site. I guess, you know, it's only as good as the tastes of the mob, which concerns me to some extent. But it does occasionally. I found a couple cool rooms for like specialty genres, like psytrance, and then there's a lot of electronic stuff on there that's pretty good. But I've actually been listening to music a lot more on the Spotify client that I have on the computer. So I've just been using the free account, but it is pretty cool. It's a pretty cool service because, like, you know, Spotify is a lot different. Like Turntable.fm is where people can go online and listen to what other people are playing. Basically, people get to virtually DJ to virtual rooms of people, right? Whereas Spotify is sort of like it's sort of a competitor to iTunes, except it has a really large library, like they claim about 10 million songs, and you can just pick the song you want. So I was just listening to some London Suede, the London Suede as they call them here, even though they're just Suede in Britain. You just pick the song that you want or the album you want to listen to, and you just listen to it on your desktop. And then they have a pay service, $10 a month, and it competes with RDO and some other stuff. But I mean, what is your take on the phenomenon of these you know, streaming services for music, Jessica?
From music?
Services like Spotify.
Oh, I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to bring back the genre, and I think companies are starting to learn now about adding in how they get paid, how they make money.
Yeah, I guess there's some money from subscribers for services like RDO and Spotify, and I guess some people are questioning whether they're going to be able to last for a long time, and it's kind of, you know, it's a new thing, so it's hard to say. But there is a lot of competition also from the big companies coming, and it's not exactly direct competition in all cases, but it's interesting how it looks like Apple, Google, and Amazon are all planning their own types of music services, music cloud services. They seem to be more oriented around putting your own music online and then, you know, and then listening to it than having just a library of music you can stream. But, you know, I know like Apple is going to offer iTunes Match, so that's going to be a chance to upload your music, or if it matches something in their library, you can listen to like the, I don't know, 256K version of it through their library. And I guess in comparison, Google Music, it involves uploading every song you have in your library directly to their servers. And I think Amazon Cloud Music Service is offering a competitor to that in that area too. So I don't know, like you remember hearing about iTunes Match when it was announced, right, Jessica? I mean, Google Music is still in beta, but that service, what do you think about that? Like, you know, whereas like Google Music, you upload the exact copies all the way up. iTunes Match tries to find your music, so they claim it doesn't take as long to upload, you know, but I mean, what do you think of those services?
I think it's good to be, you know, convenience and function, you know, rolled into one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the kind of, you know, how this shakes out, whether people, a mass audience is going to use something like Google Music, you know, or maybe Android users will, and maybe a lot of Apple users will use the iTunes Match. But I do think, like, because they have smartphone apps with the paid services and stuff, the new services like Spotify and RDO are definitely going to get some users. So I guess it's a good question about how widely they cross over, you know. So what do you think about the the next incarnation of all those services through iCloud. Do you think Apple's gonna, you know, really have a compelling offering with iCloud?
I think that's gonna be the future, because I think all this charging per device, people, I don't think, want to see it that way. They just want access to the content, their content, others' content, wherever, whenever.
Yeah, for sure.
On
well,
whatever device. And so if they have it in the cloud, it's nice, you know.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jessica. It's great to hear your input, and we definitely want to keep up with your posts online. So definitely check out jessica.sf3am.com.
That's right. Come on by.
How many URLs do you have?
Well, I have 8. I know that a lot of people have been collecting different web addresses over the years. If you check the show notes, there's a link to someone who claims to have 128. So I guess it's possible that that my 8 is... It isn't as remarkably high a number as I thought. Well, we'll be right back after a word from the birds.
And we have Jessica joining us again. I wanted to hear what Jessica thought of Twitter's new built-in photo sharing service.
Well, I think it's good that Twitter has added a photo sharing service. Really, it's just YFrog, though. And when I started using it, I realized that Twitter posts a YFrog link into your tweet, and it takes away from your total character count. And you don't even get the tracking or information on that unless... I don't even know if you can have a YFrog account and tie it to it, but I don't think you can. So if you want tracking, it's still better to upload it to Flickr, upload it somewhere else, and, you know, use Bitly for the photo sharing. You have to see, again, what your users like, if it helps them engage more. But with the way that there are a lot of these apps these days, even if you have a link to media, it's usually going to open up and show to the right, and you're going to have the icon in there showing that there's media in there. So far, for business anyway, I'd say, you know, stick with what you're using currently, because you're going to have better tracking on it.
Cool. Well, I guess the much-hyped Twitter... photo sharing isn't really much to speak of, basically you know that's that. Now another development I've seen on Twitter recently is that the t.co URL shortener seems to be kind of it seems to be used for every link, and so sometimes when you're looking at the stream, like on the website, it'll just show the URL, but you notice how when it shows URLs now, it doesn't show the HTTP. I think that's the way it gets wrapped and then displayed by when it's a t.co URL, because until recently, some URLs, depending on what client you would use or other circumstances, would use the t.co and some wouldn't. And it seems like now a lot do, but it's the type of URL shortener where it often exposes the underlying URL that it's linking to. I think it's sort of a change, and it's sort of like, do they know that Bitly just allowed, free accounts to have their own domain mapped to their Bitly links? I mean, that's pretty cool. I've got my y.djmcloud.com, and that's just, Bitly uses that to redirect my links, and I think that's kind of cool, but now they're just going to show up maybe like that in some cases, and they'll show up as t.co and others, and it's not really a big deal, right? But, I mean, now they all go through that, basically.
Why are they doing that?
It's one of those kind of more under the hood things that I think a lot of times doesn't get communicated too much about publicly. There might be something on a mailing list or something. I should dig, but I don't really think there's been too much discussion about it because it's kind of a subtle change implemented that in a more of a just like a link routing kind of area than something people think of as being in the normal feature set. One of my favorite bands from the 90s was Oasis, and I haven't listened to them much over the last handful of years, but I noticed that, a few years ago, I think they would often talk about how they were breaking up, but it didn't happen, and I think of a couple years ago, they announced that, and it seems to have stuck. So now Liam Gallagher has a band called BDI, and Noel Gallagher started a band called like Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds or something. And a lot of the people who were recently in Oasis moved with Liam Gallagher to BDI. So I don't know. We were just listening to their like songs. There's links to their YouTube videos in the show notes. What did you think of the Noel Gallagher song?
I think it sounded like an updated version of Oasis.
Okay.
But there wasn't anything listening to it now in 2011 that moved me the way when I first heard Oasis did back in, I don't want to say what, 96?
Yeah, I think that was around when they got popular in the U.S. I think that if you had to pick one, did you like the Liam Gallagher BDI or the Noel Gallagher one with the video where they're at some truck stop?
I like the BDI more.
You know, I did too. I kind of thought like I think Noel Gallagher is a great songwriter and. I kind of thought like he would stick more to a traditional Oasis sound, and BDI might go more toward like a classic rock kind of sound. And I think in some of their album tracks they do, but that song "The Roller," I think that is a lot. It seems to have a like it just seems to be a little better, have a little more than Noel Gallagher's first song. But I don't know. I guess that's one of those situations where you have to figure that each of them will try the first couple albums as they try to outdo each other because it was such a bitter rivalry. And I guess I read recently Noel Gallagher says they don't talk even anymore. So I think there's a story that was making the rounds, and I think they actually. It was one of those stories that was probably a little overcovered and overhyped, and it was about a woman trying to swim to Cuba from Florida or something like that. And I just want to read a quote that I read from I read this in the Chicago Tribune. Endurance swimmer Diana Nied, who attempted to become the first person to swim between Cuba and Florida without a shark cage, was forced to abandon her effort early Tuesday morning, roughly halfway through her journey. Niad was vomiting when she was brought aboard at 12:45 a.m. Tuesday, 29 hours after she jumped into the water sundae.
That's awful.
I could, like, you know, there's people saving her, right? And she's coming out of the water, and she's like, oh, thanks, bleh!
I'm sure she can't help it.
Just vomiting as she comes out of the water. What a way to be written up in the dispatch. Well, I know that there's a convention out there that makes a lot of old school Apple users vomit, and that is the file type, the ending on files, like .wav or .ogg or .txt. In classic Mac OS that it didn't require those, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I find it like I like those. I guess it's not really a big issue, but I know that. The people that have been using the Mac for a long, long time, they complain about that, I think.
That's why everybody should just get my iPad.
Yeah, abstract away the file system. There you go. You got the solution. Okay, well, now we have a song as we close out from our band Niner. This is the song Egypt, and you can find my website at pacificpelican.us, and you can you can find me on Twitter at pacificpelican. And thanks for joining me again, Jessica. And after the clip of the song by our band, you can hear the URL of our band, so you can go download some MP3s and. Then there's a little bit more bird singing because our birds are pretty cool. All right, well, this is the DanielJMcKeown.com podcast, number 12, August 17th, 2011.